As you all know, we recently, or as most of you know, we recently had the performance of our Living Wisdom School play, which we do every year. All 75 children from the ages of 4 to 14 are part of this enormous two-act extravaganza. This year was about Abraham Lincoln. It's always about some great soul, sometimes a well-known saint, or otherwise a saintly soul that is well-known primarily in other ways, as Lincoln was. My particular part of it this time was to make the costumes, or to arrange to have the costumes made for all those children. Theater and children and costumes are my hobby, is what I finally figured out was the right word for it. It's not exactly my dharma, but it's my hobby, so I get to do it. By a complicated series of events, the woman who was doing most of the actual sewing, her granddaughter had a birthday at a very inconvenient time, and so she had to put down the project, and so I didn't get the youngest children's costumes until just a day or two before the performance, which was a source of great anxiety for them. No matter how many times I assured them that their costumes were coming, they had never seen them and they had never put them on. So there was a constant, and I was around the property all the time, and the children were here, and a few of the, especially the more determined smaller ones, whenever they saw me, they would ask me if the costumes had come yet. And I was with, I can't remember exactly where I was, why I was with a few of the children for a short period of time, but they'd asked me if the costumes had arrived yet, and I had assured them they hadn't. And maybe 6 or 7 minutes passed, and they asked me if they had arrived yet. I answered with logic. I answered with adult logic. We've all been sitting here together this whole time. Have you seen them arrive? But when I spoke to Helen about it afterwards, because she, of course, has decades of experience, she pointed out to me the simple fact that a child has no sense of time, especially a very young child. Everything is happening in the present, and time had passed. She could tell that she'd asked, and it was no, but she knew they were coming, so maybe it was yes. You know, just sort of like sorting this all out was just my way of thinking, not hers. Well, I'm in this context, whenever I read these scripture commentaries where Jesus tells us something really explicit, no one comes down from heaven except who, no one goes up to heaven except he who came down from heaven, even so is the Son of Man in heaven. And it's perfectly clear to Jesus when he says it. He doesn't have any problem understanding it. And yet, for centuries, people have pondered it and come up with their reasoning. And from the point of view of the saints, it's as comical as when the child asked me 5 minutes later if the whole circumstances have changed. But from our point of view, given all our reference points, this all makes perfect sense to us, doesn't it? And this dilemma that we face between this assurance from all the masters that our true nature is divine and the consistent experience we have that it is not, is just creates a dilemma as impossible for us to unfathom is whether or not after 6 minutes with no apparent evidence the costumes may have yet arrived. And we ask that question over and over again, and we play out this story continuously based on an absolute refusal to accept this simple straight statement that is in every scripture, which is we are children of the light. Swami Kriyananda, in fact, in our Festival of Light every week, you know, we are forsake the darkness, please stand, raise your hands, affirm that we are children of the light. And we do that every week. Swami put that into the Festival of Light so that on a very deep subconscious level, we are children of the light, forsake the darkness. Because the other side of this dilemma, which is part of why it gets so confusing and we become 4 years old in terms of our actual comprehension of how the world works. I mean, a child who's 4 or 5 or 6 or 2 or a minute old, the full consciousness of the soul is present. The full intelligence is present. What is not present is the capacity to express it in this particular setting, to really understand what the rules of this particular story are. And when you have the opportunity, either by raising children or teaching children or having the hobby of spending a little time with children, the first thing that strikes you is how totally individualized and completely themselves they are. And all this sort of mass of children as children, it just dissolves right away, because what you're dealing with is people who are just going through their particular cycle, whatever it might be, but they don't understand the rules of the game, or they're not living yet by the same rules. They might understand the rules quite perfectly well, and they just may not be interested in them. You know, one of my friends, one of my devotee friends, he says he has a memory of the first days, weeks of his life. And I have no reason to doubt it, because of course it's perfectly possible. And what he remembers, he was the firstborn in his family, and he remembers his mother holding him for a while, then handing him to his father, and his father holding him for a while, then his father handing him back to his mother, and like this. He went back and forth a few times, he said, and it crossed his mind, they have no idea how to take care of me. In fact, that's exactly what it was. They were just each hoping the other one, you know, would be able to comfort and take care of him. And it made him nervous, you know. Here he was, and he was in the hands of these semi-competent people. It worked itself out, you know, but we perceive these things. Children perceive these things. There's no reason why they can't. They're fully aware, but they don't understand the rules of the game, and they don't have language. Master talks about, in Autobiography of a Yogi, about his memories of being in the crib and lying there. And as he put it, from the multitude of languages that were moving around in his head, from all his previous incarnations, which is of course the same with all of us, he gradually figured out that these people were consistently speaking Bengali. So he began to speak Bengali to them, but he could feel all these other flows of energy. Just on the subject of language, I read a little vignette in one of the Reader's Digest once. A child born into the Berlitz family, which at that time had the Berlitz School of Languages. So because the family enterprise was language, this child was raised in five languages simultaneously. His mother, his father, his grandmother, his grandfather, his aunt, something like that. And each adult addressed the child in that particular language and expected to be answered. And the boy had the karma to be born into that family, so he was able to respond. But when he was about four or five, he drew a different, entirely different conclusion from the whole situation. He felt that every individual in the world, I think he was younger than four, he was closer to three, every individual in the world had their own language. So he simply started answering them in a conglomeration that he was creating himself, because it seemed like an obvious and intelligent response. And it took them some time to persuade him that that really wasn't entirely necessary. Another friend of mine, Dharmarajan, he lives in Chennai now. His father is from Chennai, his mother is American. When he was a child, they would take him sometimes to India and visit his relatives there. And his relatives, apparently, this is the story as it was told to me. Dharmaraj, if you ever see this tape, you can correct me. But this is how I understood it. He said, in that, his particular family, they all spoke whatever the native language of that area is. They spoke it very loudly. And the family was sort of loud. So he spoke English in a normal tone, but whenever he spoke that language, he shouted it, because that's just how he thought it was done, you know? So we make all these decisions. So we come into this world, and we come out just as Greg was reading, you know, Divine Mother sends us out all shiny and new. And I don't just mean as a baby, although we do get a kind of reset, and we get an erase of all the memories, and the failures remain as subconscious impressions, but we no longer can vividly act them out as vividly as we can in one incarnation. And we're all shiny and new. She's not talking about incarnations, but from the very beginning of this whole, whenever the day of Brahma begins and we're manifested as we are, which are the words that I can say, but I don't have a picture of it from experience, except I believe them when they tell me. But we make up our own rules. And we make up our own rules And it's very reasonable to us, the rules that we make up. And we have a lot of companions around us who reinforce those rules because they're playing by those rules too. And this whole cycle begins that then goes on for incarnations. Where is happiness? Who am I? What is right behavior? You know, what is a moral code? How do I get what I want? What is okay? Maybe these long cycles. And we can just look around and see how many different rules people are playing by. Everybody has something different. I remember this woman I saw walking down the street. This is just a personal concept of what makes you look attractive. And she was probably not quite as, the phrase I love is chronologically developed as I am, but she was close. But the last time she had a concept of what a beautiful woman was maybe 25 or 30 years earlier. And somewhere in that, she hadn't noticed that this was no longer appropriate for her. And she was all dolled up in a way that might have suited a woman of 30, but was not ideal for a woman of her age. But she was just going down the street. These were the rules of the game as she understood it. And it made sense to her. It didn't make sense to me because I prefer to cooperate with the natural flow of things rather than trying to put a rock in the river and think that just because I want it, it's going to stay this way. I mean, we do it all the time. So one of the things that happens to us, and it's a peculiarity of the false rules that we get, we keep trying to get our happiness in ways that will give us a temporary positive experience but are not long-lasting. You know, just as simple as if you follow a very poor diet for most of your life, the chances are it will catch up with you. I mean, it doesn't always, not in this incarnation, but there are certain rules, and we just make decisions. What we have it in the Festival of Light. One of the lines are, we have this mission from God, and we're supposed to be fruitful, and we're supposed to share, but we get really excited by the experience of personal power. And then it crosses our mind, you know, why should I give away what I get? What else is wisdom if not to keep what is mine for myself? Which is a very convenient line from scripture, that one we always remember, and it justifies every selfish action. And I mean that facetiously. You know, when you're taking the last cookie, what else is wisdom except to take what is mine for myself? You know, you're not getting any of this. This is all mine. Even the devil quotes scripture, as they say. But it's in that, it's in the Festival of Light, because we're describing the universal experience that we go through. And even if we can't consciously remember when we made that decision, somewhere along the line, we became persuaded that fostering the unique interests of this entity according to what my ego-identified self tells me is pleasurable and positive is a good idea. What else is wisdom except to keep what is mine for myself? My talents, my identity, my this. But the problem is we are working against a greater reality. And the greater reality always wins. It might not win in the short term. We see lots of scoundrels who die rich, surrounded by their families, without ever being exposed. We see lots of selfish people who get away with it. I mean, it doesn't always happen in the short run. But then we see people who have catastrophic experiences around us. And if we're not thinking in terms of karma over many incarnations, we don't understand why that happens either. But the greater reality is we are a part of all that is. And we have to go through these stages, first, of our divine mission, second, of our rebellion against that mission, third, the quest for what is really happening here. You know, for a while, we can declare our own reality, and if we've developed enough capacity, enough power, enough determination, or if we're just so stupid that we don't notice the consequences of our own behavior, we just can play that out for a long time. But sooner or later, the bruises accumulate. The bruises to heart, mind, soul, spirit, they just accumulate. And then the next incarnation, we're not quite so stupid. It just doesn't take us quite as long to figure it out. When I was younger as a child, I didn't have any context for the principles of self-realization, but I know that I've followed this path many times, many, many times. Of course, I would have to have found it so early and to have recognized it as completely as I did so fast. All that says is, this is not the first time I've been here. I'm just picking up where I left off, just waiting to get old enough to be able to make that decision. I can vividly remember looking out the picture window of my parents' house at 3809 Hillcrest Drive, El Paso, Texas, and staring out the window, and I was 10. I had this feeling that if I stared across to the neighbor over there who was mowing his lawn, that if I looked hard enough, the veil would crack. I didn't have the words veil, and I didn't know what it would crack to, but I knew that what I was looking at was not real, and that there was something behind it. And if I just maybe concentrated hard enough, it would penetrate. I mean, where does knowledge like that come from? It comes from the fact that we've lived through it. We've committed ourselves to a false reality over and over and over again, reached the end of that incarnation or one way or another, and then somehow, maybe just the experience of death itself. Oh my gosh, look, I misunderstood the whole thing. This is what so many people tell us when they have these death and return experiences. It's not what's happening is different. They come back and say, it's different. It's about love. It's about wisdom. It's not what's important is not what you think is important. It's all those little things you were brushing by. In other words, it's your consciousness. And some part of us remembers. So what we're having to do, this is the quest. We get to the point where we're no longer, we recognize that just self-declaring, no matter how powerfully I do it, does not work. And we become humbled, just a little humbled, and we become interested in what actually is true. But because we have followed a false path for so long, and because we have suffered from following that false path, not necessarily even gigantic suffering. It doesn't have to be leprosy or early death or tragic illness or anything like that. Yogananda has the phrase in autobiography, what really gets us is the anguishing monotony. You know, even tragedy is energizing because you have to work hard to overcome it, to keep from drowning, but it's the anguishing monotony. And just before I found Ananda, that was where I was standing. Thoreau put it in his words, most men live lives of quiet desperation. I mean, that phrase scared the living daylights out of me when I was younger. I didn't really know what it meant, but I could tell it wasn't good. And I was concerned that most people live that way. But I remember, again, now I'm staring out a different window. I'm staring out the back window of the apartment I was living in San Francisco during my brief urban sojourn, just looking out the back window at the back gardens there. And now I'm a grown-up, you know. Now I'm not 10. Now I'm all of maybe 19, maybe 20 by then. And just, again, thinking, but now I knew that just staring at it was not going to change it. Is this it? You know, really? And I remember Thoreau's comment, is this it? How could it possibly be it? And then, because I was desperate, Swami Kriyananda walked into my life, and this is it. You know, there it is. I'm looking for the first time in my life at a human being who manifests what it is that I wanted to be. I didn't even know the words. Happy was a nice beginning. Meaningful, clear. He was living something that would endure, that was true. That's what I knew. I knew that he had picked it up from the right thread. Okay? So we find that and we're ready, but we have all these memories of it not working out. You know, that we tried really sincerely, and on some level it either ended in anguishing monotony or outright catastrophe. And so we carry all that with us. And it is a profound and almost overwhelming insecurity. And it's an insecurity based on really solid fact, because we were wrong a lot. I mean, really a lot. Swamiji once talked about something that he did, and he said the only explanation I have is I was stupid, is what he said. He once described all of human life as just a hospital. You know, a hospital, a zoo, whatever we want to call it. I used to, years ago, think that Ananda Village, and it wasn't the village then, it was just Ananda, this rather chaotic but nonetheless marvelously exhilarating and fun adventure in trying to make that thing happen, was a very sophisticated experiment with lunatics. That like on an edge that we couldn't see, there was some kind of an electrified fence we just couldn't get next to, and we were being studied just to see what would happen if you just put all these young people together in there and just kind of let them have their way. You know, that was because Swami had no choice but to give responsibility and opportunity to those of us who were so unqualified to have it. That was where the concept of lunatic came in. Him, us, all of us. But I was joking because it was so much fun. But we carry this tremendous sense of it not having worked out. And also because during all those incarnations before we become connected to God, we're not operating with a full deck. We're operating with this self-enclosed ego system, and we're ego ecosystem, I guess the words are really close, aren't they? This very self-enclosed system where we've either blocked out or don't know how to relate to a greater reality, and we imagine that we're strong and we're in charge. And it's a complete fallacy. And we carry that fear with us. I had a career as a corporate trainer that lasted about 7 minutes. I actually maybe did 4 or 5 programs, but it was an extremely short experience because I couldn't say anything that I really wanted to say, and I just wasn't good. I wasn't a good translator. It just wasn't my destiny. Others have had great careers bringing master's teaching into that environment, but it wasn't for me. And it came to a head, right? It was in 1989 when we had an earthquake here that was fairly serious, and the piece of the Bay, was it the Bay Bridge? A piece of it collapsed, and some people died in the sandwich. It was not attractive. The company that I was working for, my sole client, wanted me to come. The wife of someone in that company had been crushed on the bridge. So there was a real nervous energy there. So my friend wanted me to come in and reassure them. And she was a devotee, but we had talked about the language that was acceptable, then it wasn't. And I thought for a moment. I said, I can't reassure them unless I can talk about God, and I can't talk about God. I said, the only possible way to deal with whether or not you or your relative was on the bridge at that precise instant is you have to have a picture of a greater reality. I didn't have that word as clear as I have it now, but you have to be in relation to something greater than yourself. You have to have faith in something greater than just yourself. Well, can't you just tell people to believe in themselves? No, actually, I can't. Because not one of them would have had the power to prevent that happening or to understand why it happened. But that insecurity, that's what we carry. Everything is just fine. And then your wife is on the Bay Bridge at the precise moment when the lanes collapse. And we become terrified. And then we direct that terror toward ourselves. And then we come onto the path. And now we understand that we're part of this great flow of energy, that I'm just a little bubble in this great sea of infinity, and that my life is this karmic flow, and that this is my purpose, and all of these different things. But that anxiety for so long just stays with us. And it's that anxiety, it's that memory of failure, it's that memory of heartbreak, it's that memory of misjudging the situation completely, of holding on or letting go. Just, you make a list. I don't have to make your list. It probably looks a lot like mine because we've all been in this together for a long time, but it hangs around with us. And the single most important point, and to my experience, the single hardest point on the spiritual path is to realize that it's all just fine. It's just fine, you know? Because we are children of the light. And the very idea, even that anything bad ever happened to us, not that we didn't suffer, but that that suffering was pointless or our fault or for no reason. It was all a necessary cycle in order to bring us to the point where we could just surrender it all and see who we really are. We are children of the light. We have never been anything but children of the light. And all those mistakes of the past, they're so trivial. They loom so large in our mental sky that they infiltrate everything we do. I mean, I can't tell you how many times myself and the people I talk to, I just don't know if I'm doing it right. Am I doing enough for Master? I made a mistake. I spoke wrong to this person. You know, this relationship collapsed. My children won't speak to me anymore. My money didn't work out. My health is broken down. You know, I mean, because these things are real. But instead of our just standing back and saying, I am just a child of God, and he's taking me through wherever I need to go. This is the only path to freedom. It must be my fault. I mean, the inclination to make it my fault, and therefore to suffer. We are so committed, and we're so wrong. Just so totally wrong. And Master just says it so simply, you know, if you have joy in the moment, you have God. And the promise is so simple that we refuse to believe it. It can't be that simple, we say. But you know, it is. Jesus said to his disciples, you know, the world won't like you. He said it stronger than that. The world will despise you. He said the world will hate you because you're repudiating everything that they stand for. And of course, Jesus' disciples, most of them, at the beginning and at different times, they had a pretty rough time of it. You know, they got fed to the lions and things like that. You know, there were some tough periods in there. But he said this, I love the way, at least the way it's translated. He said, the world will despise you. The world will hate you. And then he said, but be of good cheer. I love that phrase, good cheer. Okay, I'll be happy. They all despise me, but I'll be of good cheer. And he says, because I have conquered the world. I, the infinite spirit, this world is just a shadow. It's just a dream. It's not that we didn't misread the signs and suffer. We did suffer. We had a terrible time. But after it's all over and we realize that it was just a misunderstanding, if you think someone betrays you and you go through a horrible experience of upset over it and then find out it was a misunderstanding, did that person ever do anything to you, actually? And that's exactly what our whole life experience is. We got confused because we're stupid. Somewhere in there, we just misread it, just like that little child. 6 minutes have passed. Have the costumes come yet? You know, I've been following wrong action for all this time. Can I be happy now? Oh, dear, it's still not working. But when we finally see that little, wherever, whenever it comes, it's just this little pinpoint of light, and we begin to follow it, we drag all that stuff with us. And there just comes a point where grace takes over, but it's a lot of stuff, and we've carried it for a long time, and this is the last point about this. It's not effortless. And this is confusing, because it's inherent, it's inevitable, it's the only truth there is. But at the same time, we have to work really, really hard merely to realize what is already there. What a funny story, isn't it? But the energy we have to put out is, yes, we have to do our sadhana, we have to pray, we have to discipline ourselves, we have to, you know, we have to be nice, you know, we have to just all this stuff we have to constantly do. But the main thing that we have to do is we have to get rid of the thought that we're not good enough, or that we have to work so hard to realize that we don't have to work at all. And the discipline required, the primary discipline, is to hold at bay that thought that God doesn't love me unless and until I do thus and so. And even then, it's conditional. We project upon the divine, upon the masters, the worst of our own qualities, that he's measuring and judging and rejecting and accepting. and thinking and, you know, like all of this. Not at all. You know, God is our Father, God is our Mother. If you ask of your Father a loaf of bread, will he give you a stone? If you are the prodigal son and have just dissipated the family inheritance and finally come back, will he celebrate your return? If we finally open our eyes wide enough and get above the horizon line and see that the whole thing was just a joke, Master's gigantic poem about cosmic consciousness ends a tiny bubble of laughter. I have become the sea of mirth itself. I've many times contemplated, what a way to end that poem. It ends like it's a joke. It's like the whole thing, the entire story, was just a joke. And we're all just, ha, 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 what a good time that was. Hard to get there, but worth trying, isn't it? And worth using that, just that, those simple words as the answer to everything that ails us. Oh, a tiny bubble of laughter. I thought I was a miserable sinner, but guess what? I'm a tiny bubble of laughter, and I have become the sea of mirth itself. God bless you.